Welcome to Kids Get Acquainted with the Internet, a Girl Meets World podcast. I'm Dan.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Keith.
And today we're going to be talking about Episode 5 of Girl Meets World, Girl Meets the Truth.
All right, so a couple quick things to just get off right off the bat. We're doing Skype again. I'm using a new computer with different software, and it's had lots of technical issues, so hopefully this records. But if it doesn't, or if it's choppy or weird, I'm sorry.
And also, Keith and I are on the same line this time instead of it being three different lines.
That may help the situation, and that may hurt the situation.
Yeah. And also, I guess sorry that we're getting this up a few days late. As I mentioned last podcast, I went to a wedding this weekend, so because of sort of the time crunch and trying to get this up as fast as we can, we're not going to focus as much on a Boy Meets World episode this week. We might sprinkle.
But we do have a lot of connections to Boy Meets World, so that's going to balance it out, I think.
Yeah. So that'll be good. All right.
And also, don't worry, because in our reaction video, we did not let Dan being away take away from that.
Yes. They did a quality video without me.
You will all love it if you haven't looked at our YouTube channel yet.
Don't.
No, don't listen to Keith. He's just being shy, everyone.
It's chock full of bloopers, and if you can make it to the end, you're a pretty cool person.
Yeah, because the video is a little wacky in the way that all the bloopers come first.
Yeah.
It's like having dessert before dinner over and over again.
So if you do want to check out that interesting experiment, you can do so at GMW Podcast YouTube page. All right, let's get into Girl Meets the Truth. So I actually liked the episode a lot more than you guys did. I think there are some glaring problems, which I'm sure you guys will get into. But the highs of the episode, the good parts, I really, really liked and actually were probably my favorite pieces of, like, I think that the message of this episode is probably the best message they've done so far, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, I totally think it's a really actually good message that a lot of adults need to learn.
The chicken?
Sort of the chicken, but the overall idea of dealing with truth and when to tell the truth and how to tell the truth and whether it's always good to tell the truth and what the consequences of telling the truth are big things. Actually, I was thinking of both of you this entire episode.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. But I think
you had one of us in mind more than the other.
Yeah. I think that it would actually work a lot. I don't think that the play factored in very well, and I think that the way they handled the Farkle storyline was confusing and weird and problematic.
Awesome.
But I actually thought that the Maya stuff was pretty good. I thought the Corrin Topanga stuff was the best it's ever been, and that Augie was probably the best he's ever been. And yeah, so those are my overall thoughts. I'd probably give it a B+ because I know that there's significant issues with the Farkle side of things, but yeah, you guys go.
All right. Okay, so like I said in the reaction video, I felt that this had its high points and its low points, but I feel like the low points really brought it down. And though the high points were good, I don't know if they were exactly like redeeming.
I think everything before the intro song was completely worthless except for... Well, no, I mean, literally, it had nothing to do with
that.
It. It was exactly how we've been talking about. There's a lot of unnecessary scenes. The only thing that is possibly useful from that first 3 minutes is the part where Maya and Riley are talking to Farkle, and Maya wants Riley to tell the truth to Farkle, and Riley's like, I can't hurt him. And that's...
Oh, wait, you're talking... So I'm confused about what you think the first scene is.
Well, I'm saying everything before the intro song.
Okay.
So when they're on the stage, and then when they're in the hallway, which is a little over 3 minutes.
Okay.
I think that whole thing could have been condensed to just...
A minute.
Or changed completely.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To a different
scene. Yeah.
I actually think that the opening scene is more than just useless. It makes everything make no sense.
I totally agree. It's
yeah.
It was very awkward. It was not...
I thought it was a dream sequence. That was the first tweet I put.
Yeah, I thought it was like a Farkle dream sequence.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah.
Maybe we should... let's grade it real quick, and then we'll jump into the intro, and we can work chronologically from there.
I mean, I gave it a B+, but what do you guys...
I give it a C.
Okay.
I would give it a D overall.
Wow. By far the worst episode, you're saying.
Yes, I think overall, by far the worst episode.
Wow.
But the Corey and Topanga part was by far the best.
So you're saying the Corey and Topanga part is why it didn't fail.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm really surprised, guys. I think this is heads and shoulders above Sneak Attack and Girl. Actually, the first three. I think it's better than the first three by far. But
I've never heard that expression before.
Heads and shoulders?
Yeah, I mean, are you pouring shampoo all over this episode?
It's yes, I poured shampoo all over this episode.
That's why your laptop's not working anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I'm really surprised, but okay. So they're doing this Romeo and Juliet thing.
Hey, look, our two leads that everyone wants to have a romantic pairing are Romeo and Juliet. How yep. convenient.
So yeah, but they're playing with tropes that are very tried and true of, you know, our leads are in a play and they have to kiss each other and like, oh my god, they're gonna kiss each other, except that they're doing it in a really weird way where they're skipping over like, oh, Riley's gonna have to kiss Lucas, what does she feel about that? Instead we just start in the middle of the episode.
Right,
and
you skip all the build and all the drama and yeah. go right to the moment.
Not that I want that trope that happens in every other show, but
right.
like
it would've, like the play could have been its own separate episode and yeah. it could have been done a lot more effectively. Yeah.
The other episode this could have been, at least the Farkle, with the other storyline, the Farkle storyline could have been, it's just Riley wasn't even in the play, Lucas wasn't even in the play, Farkle was just in a play and did badly, and that was what she lied to him about, which would make
yeah,
a whole lot
that,
more sense.
That too.
A lot more sense.
Yeah.
And in comparison, we can talk about the episode of Boy Meets World, The Play's the Thing, mm-hmm. in which I think they were doing Hamlet, and Corey was the lead, then he quit, and then Minkus came in and replaced him, and Minkus was doing poorly. Corey wanted to take his lead back, but Mr. Feeny only let him take an entry-level role, and he was a spear carrier, which I think was a direct reference to
yeah.
this, which is interesting because in that episode, at the end, after he sort of went through his little arc and realized, oh, there are no small roles, there are only small actors, and he convinces the other spear character to make his own part, you know, make it his own, and then at that point he attacks Sean and ruins the play. So that reminded me of this,
yeah.
spear carrier ruining the play, but the rest of it, I think, fell short.
Yeah. And we should say Boy Meets World had a lot of references to Romeo and Juliet and Shakespeare stuff. We had the pilot, we have the little them performing for Mr. Feeny, the not the main characters, but the two side people, and then I put all the stuff with Prepare to Die Jedi Master with Eric
yep.
and,
yep.
and Jack, and when Eric is in Shakespeare.
That's the Eric Goes to Hollywood episode,
yes.
right?
Oh, that is, yeah.
Yeah, yes,
that's
is.
Why he goes, because he did so well on the
right.
play.
Mm-hmm. And he can only do Shakespeare.
Yeah. So say we were just going to go with this plot line. The fact that they didn't show him kissing them, we don't know if they kissed him. And then later in the episode, he kisses Riley, and it's her first kiss, quote-unquote.
Let's come back to that.
Well, I'm just saying that did he kiss them in that opening scene? Because we didn't see it, and they act as though
it
didn't
happen.
I don't think
so, yeah.
I don't think so either.
So we don't know what happened.
No, I don't think he even got the chance that time, because Farkle jumped in and ruined the play.
No. I'm saying...
No, he means Farkle.
Yeah, I'm saying, what did Farkle do? He ends that scene
oh.
at the beginning with him about to kiss Maya and Riley, and then apparently he didn't kiss them then.
Yeah, I don't even... It was really awkward. So Maya stands up in the audience, and she's like, yeah, you kissed that girl, spear
yeah.
carrier. And then they were like, why don't you come up here too? And
yeah.
so then she does go up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, which is
really
weird.
Awkward.
Yeah.
I didn't expect her to go up there, but I think she just didn't want Riley to be by herself.
Well,
the way
also,
she went
like,
up there was
where's
awkward,
the director
in my opinion.
Here?
Huh?
Yeah, where's the director?
Yeah, that too. I would have liked to see a teacher being like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
Or Corey even being like, get away from my daughter?
Yeah, well, to begin with, Corey wouldn't have let Lucas and Riley be Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
If he had any...
Yeah.
If the writers
standing.
Remembered anything they did before.
Or if yeah. he had any standing with the theater director.
Yeah. No, I just think that this scene really played like a dream sequence for Farkle, and it was
yeah.
really odd. I really liked the episode beyond this scene, but I do agree that... Because this scene was released early, and I assume this scene was like near the end of the episode. And then I was like, this is the first scene? I'm really confused.
I feel if you removed... all mention of the theater part,
yeah,
to me that would bump this episode at least to a C+ for me, if not a B.
Yeah,
I can, yeah, I agree.
But
with
that
thing
theater
is,
part
Farkle,
totally weighed it down for
well,
me.
Farkle
is,
really brought it down for me.
I even thought that the theater part could have worked if, like I had said, I think it would have been fine if it had just been Farkle did badly in a play and he wasn't able,
yeah,
because that at least thematically fit and was a different kind of thematic thing because he was doing a white lie for a good thing, so it was a different side of the theme.
Right,
which,
and in addition to that, if Farkle wasn't so almost vulgar, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah. So we should really address that. So last week we had this big debate, which I cut down massively in editing.
From like 15 minutes to 4.
Yeah. We're basically, Caitlin.
15 minutes that we caught on recording, maybe.
Yeah. But basically, Caitlin was saying she didn't really like the portrayal of Farkle because of how he was going after the girls over and over again without them wanting him to, and it was showing him as, like, it was bad.
He's aggressive.
Yeah. And that that's a bad thing to set as an example because you shouldn't go after someone over and over again after they tell you no. And I was sort of saying, well, they don't really seem to mind, blah, 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 blah. And this episode completely, like, screwed over my argument because he gets... And the thing is, like, I don't even know how we're supposed to feel when he kisses. It's hard to not skip ahead. But, yeah, he's very pushy on all the girls. And it's just it's a weird situation.
It's very troubling.
Yeah. And I don't really even know whether we're supposed to be rooting for him as a couple with anyone or not at this point.
I don't root for Farkle at all. In fact, I kind of want Farkle to transfer. I kind of wish it was something like once Corey meets Minkus, they get in like a huge fight and he's like, Farkle, I don't want you, this man teaching you, and I'm taking you away somewhere to a private school, sir.
Well, okay, so now I want to ask our Twitter people and everybody else who's listening, what do you feel about Farkle? Like, especially if you're a younger listener, do you have the same sort of reaction to him that we are? I'm still not quite as extreme as them. I don't think that he ruined the episode or ruins the show. I will say, even getting into scene two when they're in the hallway, it didn't make sense to me. Like, why would Farkle be crushed if he ruined the play if, like, he clearly intended to ruin the play? Like, that didn't ring true to me either. I was like, why? He's like, oh, good, I thought that I ruined it, and now you're telling me I'm great, and that didn't make any sense to me because he, like, clearly went forth to ruin. So I think it's weird that Corey, having worked there, never really reacted to the play in any shape or form. Especially if we're to believe that Farkle kissed his daughter and Maya on stage. You think Corey would...
Yeah, it's not very well thought out.
I kind of feel like something was cut off in editing. Like, I can totally picture the end of that scene being Corey coming and stopping it.
I wish it was.
Yeah, I feel like that... No, but because that later on in the episode, they say that was your first kiss, I feel like that had to have been cut off in editing or something.
Yeah, she couldn't have kissed Farkle in the beginning because otherwise they wouldn't have said that was her first kiss.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And that's continuity within one episode. That's not like Boy Meets World terrible continuity. So... But anyway...
And just while we're on Farkle, I just want to say that I know that you brought up that you thought Corey Fogelmanis was working with the character. I kind of think he's trying too hard and he's overacting. I know that the character of Farkle is supposed to be over the top anyways, but I don't know. I don't feel like the actor is particularly owning it.
I think it's really hard for me to even judge this because it's hard to know what's the actor, what's the directing, what's the writing.
It's early.
Yeah, it's hard to set because I don't feel like he's... I still think he has comedic timing. I just think that the character is kind of odd and his motivations are misplaced.
It's a certain type of comedic timing.
Yeah.
That I don't particularly gravitate towards, and I think she does not either, and that's affecting you very harshly in your decision.
I mean, but you guys, like, I remember, Keith, you liked his interactions in the second episode with Maya when they were at the library. Like,
right.
It's not like he hasn't had moments, but I don't know.
Yeah, that was much more...
Tame.
And just naturalized. That was more slice of life and less, you know, surrealist, crazy...
Yeah. I do want to mention a couple lines that I did like early on. Like, I liked when Riley was like, I'm not afraid, I'm nice. And then Maya was like, you think I'm not nice? And she goes, no, I'm afraid to say that. I thought that was pretty good interaction.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, let's start being a little bit positive.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so, I thought there was some good stuff. And you know what I also have been liking in this episode is that Maya has more of the, like, actually kind of biting humor that we were saying that we kind of miss, where she's actually being mean, but in a way where it's okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah. What I really liked with Maya was when Riley was asking where she got the locket, you know, France, you know.
Yeah.
That's, I don't believe you because...
You were in France? Si, senor.
Yeah. He would have brought me back, what was it, a baguette or what did she say?
No, croissant.
Yeah. She hands her like a Hot Pocket or something. Subway or
something. No, it was a chocolate croissant.
Yeah. I also think that they had some good like camera angle humor there. When I liked how like Riley stayed in the background and Maya came to like the foreground and was like big in the camera, and we were seeing her reactions as Riley was figuring out that she was eating something bad.
I liked
the sound that Rowan made, and she's like, "Wah!"
Yeah.
I did notice there was better camera work in this episode. Yeah. What stood out to me was a lot more close-up shots, like on their feet at the end.
Yeah, and I also really liked Riley's delivery of the pipe when she's like piping hot when when she first gets the croissant. I thought that was just really weird and good. But okay, can we talk a little about Corey's little lesson he has at the beginning in the classroom?
Yeah, coinciding with when Riley first sees that Maya has the locket.
Yeah, I do want to just first point out that for some reason, Corey's traded out the word world with universe, and now has decided to say that 12 times an episode.
Yeah.
Which, the first time I see, said it, I was like, yay, and I did a tweet about like how kids get acquainted with the universe kind of thing, but then he said it like 7 more times. And
it really reminded me of, well, I'll get to that later. There was a specific scene when he was talking about the universe that reminded me of the last episode of Boy Meets World.
Yeah. Actually, do you think that maybe there was anything there with how, well, like, this might be a big stretch, just saying that they're doing the Shakespeare thing and that they were talking about universe and that also the Hollywood episode is the one where they talk about kids getting with the universe and...
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I don't think it's crazy. I think that might have had some influence. Yeah.
In general, I think it was a recurring theme to say those things. Like, for her, it reminded her of the last episode. For me, it reminded me of when they took over Feeny's house and made a bread and breakfast.
Yeah. Wait, which episode are you saying reminded you of the bed and breakfast episode?
The one because it kept saying universe, because they kept saying, oh, the universe doesn't care about us anymore.
Yeah.
It's when you want to get in trouble, when Corey wants to get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so while we're talking about the classroom scene, I have an interesting note that's just a reoccurring thing in the show. It's interesting that Maya sits in the front row but doesn't like school, which is kind of the opposite of a stereotypical student stereotype that the kids that sit in the back are like
stereotype.
Well, okay, but I think there's I actually thought about this recently, and I think the reason for that is that Riley is supposed to be a good student and wants to sit at the front, and so Maya sits with Riley. Though it's weird that she's not behind.
I have a big hole in that, because in Boy Meets World, they sat in a, you know, in the row.
Yeah.
All going back.
Yeah, they sat in columns. So Keith mentioned to me
went to Topanga, Corey, then Sean.
It might be a camera angle thing.
That's what we were saying, that it might just be for better shots that they talk side by side rather than front to back. Yeah. The sad thing.
Okay, as far as Corey's specific lesson, he starts talking about truth. And now I think that this is vague, I give you that, but there is a lot to talk about in history involving truth and objectivity and subjectivity. They didn't go into it as much as they could have, but I thought it was a good starting point. And I was like, is this going to be a commentary on Snowden? Because when he first started talking, I was like, they could technically go that route.
That's interesting. I didn't really pick up on that. I felt it was more of like a historical thing than a recent events type thing.
Yeah, but he specifically says people who tell the truth have had very bad things happen to them. I was just...
To me, that was more like people who made scientific discoveries and then got like a backlash, that kind of thing.
I think I also had it in my head because I've now characterized Lucas as Captain America. So basically the last Captain America movie is a big sort of allegory for Snowden, and it's basically they're like, it's completely like pro Snowden. And so when Lucas had his one line where he said something about like, oh, but it's like important to still tell the truth even though it might be hard or whatever, I'm like, yeah, that's right, Captain America.
Nice.
You go there, boy.
So, yeah. Do we want to say a little bit about Lucas now that I guess brought him up, or do we want to just wait till later when he comes back?
I, real quick, will just say, whether I like the character or not, I feel like he did nothing in this episode to further the storyline.
I agree.
He complicated rather than...
I kind of agree, but I will say that I liked him more here than I've liked him most other times. That at least, I still think he's a very, like, typical leading guy, but at least now he has, like, some confidence and cockiness, which, like, I feel like he's playing it with a little bit more, like, actual pizzazz.
I didn't like the end, especially, with him.
Okay, we'll get there.
Alright, so...
Let's talk about the locket, maybe?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about... So, when Riley first sees the locket, she's... very quick to judge Maya
in the middle of class.
Yeah, just randomly in the middle of class when she sees it, and I don't know. Okay, I understand that she knows what Maya's financial state is.
Yeah.
But to quickly assume that your best friend stole something, like what if it was an heirloom from her grandmother, or what if it was or what if her mom saved up to get her a nice present?
I might have to rewatch the scene from that perspective, but I guess kind of saw it as her first thing is being, oh, where did you get it? Not like, where did you get it? And then once she was being sort of cagey about where she got it, then she was getting a little bit more curious. And then when she says a thing about the dad, which she knows is a clear lie, that was what set her off in the "you stole it"
Oh,
direction.
I don't know.
What really killed it for me was the fact that when Riley notices Maya wearing the locket, it just comes out very inorganically and it just blurts out of nowhere. It didn't seem like she just noticed it. It just seemed like it was for the writing of the episode because they couldn't think of anything better. Because the class was almost over at that point. You gotta know that they saw each other before class. It just seemed like a way to set it up that wasn't really convincing.
Yeah, I feel like we could have used a little bit more of, like, Maya playing with it or something before Riley says it.
Yeah, that would have worked for me. I thought that when the bell rang was a very convenient timing when Corey ends on, like, a poignant note about the truth. And that can be seen as cheesy, but at the same time, I've had teachers do that before where they, like, actually look at the time and they're just like, the bell's about to ring, but remember this, kids, or something like that. Like, I've literally had that happen to me, so I just wanted to bring it up that I thought it was kind of funny. Yeah. I liked Riley and Maya's clothes. Riley was wearing kind of a, like, oversized, frumpy pink cardigan, and it was really believable to me. You know, she was wearing comfy clothes to class, and, like, she wasn't totally done up this time.
Yeah. It looked warm.
It also didn't... Yeah. It doesn't, like, take away from her, like, looking good either, because she just looked adorable. So, like,
yeah, wearing comfortable clothes can look good, everyone.
Yeah. Remember
And
this.
Maya was wearing a hipster cat shirt, and the cat had, like, glasses and a backwards baseball cap on, and it was awesome, and I want that shirt.
So she was wearing a hipster cat shirt, and then the next day she was wearing a hipster lion shirt.
Oh yeah, this is true.
I did not recognize this, but that's pretty great.
Yeah, and then the next day she was wearing an Abbey Road shirt.
They're both, like, under her jacket, so I don't know.
So then they walk out into the hallway, and Riley is still on Maya about the locket, and she won't give it up, and... I mean, she won't let up on it.
Yeah.
And Maya's talking about, like, oh, you think telling the truth is important? And Riley's like, of course I do. And then she's like, then why won't you tell Farkle that he was bad in the play or whatever?
Yeah.
And when Farkle goes, like, what? Or whatever, I hated that.
I actually liked it better in this than I did on the trailer, but I still, like...
Oh, I really did not enjoy it. I thought it was over the top. I thought... I don't know if it was bad acting or poorly written. I think it was a little bit of both.
Not about me!
All right, so let's get into the dinner scene where we get the beginning of the great storyline.
It was really authentic Boy Meets World, I think. Corey and Topanga were well done, and they were going back into their true selves again.
Yeah.
They reached their final form.
They were well done, much like the chicken over cups.
And I guess I have to say, I mean, I was just really happy because this is the first... Well, I guess last week we kind of got a Topanga-Corey storyline, but it was really more about, like, Topanga just, like, being there for Corey, and she wasn't really a character in her own right, as much as just a supporting, like, good wife. And here, I just really felt like it was Topanga again, not
here
just the mom.
We got a little bit of antagonism that we needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Topanga's face, her facial expressions, were also really Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Like when she's annoyed, like, that looks like Topanga's annoyed face.
Yeah.
You know that Corey's in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Corey had some great lines. So Corey, you know, had that, like, lovable thing about him that lets him get away with saying some really asinine things and you still love him. Because, I mean, like, I loved, have we prayed? Have we prayed?
I know how this chicken died. It ate this chicken. That was a great line.
So, I mean, like, he's able to be a jerk, but it's still okay because you know, like, that he's not trying to be mean and that he's going to learn from this jerkish behavior.
He's trying to be mean.
I think
okay, so what this episode reminded me of was Honesty Night. It's a Boy Meets World episode. It's the episode where Topanga gets her, like...
Stupid haircut.
She gets a new haircut when they're in college.
Oh,
and
yes.
And, like, the braids and everything, and he's making fun of it. So I think it's at that point... We've got M&Ms, by the way, so if you hear some crinkle crinkle, it's the bag. I think it got to the point where first he was telling her what he thought, and then he was having fun with being mean. Because he had a lot of fun being mean in that episode.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that.
Keith's a jerk.
Yeah, so basically Keith is Corey in this episode.
Yeah, so anyone listening, you know what I put up with.
Yeah, I mean, no, and this is such a thing. I mean, there's so many people that... I don't know how to say this without being mean to Keith, but, like, yeah, there's a lot of people who don't know how to say the truth and say what they mean without being kind of a jerk about it, and that there is such a thing as telling the truth and being honest, but saying it in a way that doesn't hurt a person's feelings.
You can take something away from this episode.
I'm a treasure.
Yeah, no, I guess, I feel, it's not just Keith. I know a lot of people that are like this, that just, like, are like, oh, I'm just being honest. And, you know, yes, you can be honest, but you don't, you can be like, oh, I like your hair like this, but it's okay like this, or whatever, without being like, your hair is terrible. Even what I said wasn't as good as you could have gone, but whatever.
Sometimes it's endearing as a character trait to be as honest and sincere.
Sometimes.
Keith, what Dan is trying to tell you, what Boy Meets World is trying to tell you, what the world is trying to tell you,
the
universe is speaking to you, Keith, need to be nicer.
Really? Okay. Who was your favorite character on this episode?
Who is my favorite character?
Who was your favorite character on this episode?
Augie.
Maya.
Dan, who was your favorite character?
I just said Augie. And speaking of Augie, I really liked... I really liked how...
We're talking about me, Dan.
Yeah, no, look, Corey's... I'm not saying Corey isn't funny, but the whole point is that he has to learn this lesson.
Yeah, Augie teaches him the lesson that, Corey, you're being a jerk.
Yeah.
Just because it's comedic in a sitcom and not real life. Because if you do those things in real life, you'll make the people that you love feel bad. Or if you do it at work.
Well, even in the sitcom, he made the
people
that
he loved
feel
bad. You could lose your job. Huh?
Even in the sitcom, he made the people that he loved feel bad. That was the whole
point.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the point. Is that just because it's lighthearted, because it's a sitcom, and it's also trying to give you a message, too, that you need to not sugarcoat, but just you need to be diplomatic in the way that you say things.
And it's also about the amount of times you say things. So, like, at the end of the episode, Maya still says you suck to Sparkle or whatever she says, you stink, but like, and that's, you know, that's that kind of blunt honesty, but she doesn't go on about it for the next 30 minutes, so like there's a difference in intensity. But anyway, as far as Augie goes, I just love how Augie's been used in these last two episodes as a side character. I think when he's in small doses, he's just so good, so funny, and so adorable, and
the timing is right.
Yeah,
maybe Augie can teach the lesson because he's the only one that didn't have to eat that.
I really liked his line. I'm trying to remember specifically what it was, but he's talking about the airplane thing, and then like as he's eating, he's like, and I like that, and he was like really funny about that. I really like that. Yeah. So we get the one thing is, did you guys who don't like the infusion of religion have any issue with that prayer thing, or just think it was hilarious?
No, because it's still realistic. It was done in a way that the comedic worth and you know, and the storyline worth was enough that, you know.
I didn't have any issue with it. I just was wondering whether you would.
Well, I liked it.
It's because they weren't trying to, like, force religious beliefs on anyone. It was very realistic because people do that. They pray before dinner. And also, I liked that Topanga was like, oh, yeah, you say your prayers or whatever.
That wasn't selling anything to me. That was just, you know, being the family.
It was also because it was so comedic and over the top. It wasn't, like, a heartfelt religious moment. Yeah. All right. But then, so then we go back into Riley's room. And
I think Riley was kind of being a jerk.
Yeah, I can sort of see that. So basically Maya comes in and she's trying to, you know, push off this whole locket talk by talking about her sneaky pigeon.
I like the sneaky pigeon.
I really like the sneaky pigeon.
Did I have, like, a resolution?
Yeah.
Well, not at the end, but I mean, I guess resolution's not the word.
The resolution.
Explanation.
The resolution is that the pigeon is God. That's what I tweeted and everybody liked.
Really?
Really?
Whether that's, like, supposed to be there or not, that's totally an interpretation that's valid. You can totally say that God is the pigeon, and that, or the embodiment of the universe is in the pigeon.
So then is the squirrel the devil?
Yes.
So I just have to say, as a personal thing on that, I hate pigeons. I'm not even joking a little bit, so I am religious and believe in God, and I love God. I hate pigeons. I don't want God to be embodied by pigeons. I have when I sit in the Boston Common and a pigeon flies my way, I yell at them to leave me alone.
Get out of here, you bird!
But do you think that that's, like, completely ridiculous, or do you sort of see what I'm saying?
That I think is really stupid, yes. I just thought it was, like, a weird thing that had no reason. It was just a weird, quirky thing.
Well, I mean,
I'm not going to say that you don't have any merit in what you're saying, because, I can see where you're coming from. I just don't have that interpretation.
Yeah. And I mean, personally, it's so ridiculous and over the top that I love that interpretation.
Is this supposed to be her conscience, maybe? Maybe that's a better...
It's Jiminy Cricket.
Like a Jiminy Cricket, is that?
You could say that. Yeah, that could be an interpretation. Either way, I don't feel like you need a resolution to a funny. He's just being silly.
I kind of hope either way the pigeon comes back.
I kind of hope it doesn't.
I kind of hope it's a recurring theme, and in the series finale, it becomes Mr. Feeny.
I hope that's not the case.
Feeny to be embodied by pigeons. I don't like pigeons.
Oh, man.
Alright, so anyway, the whole point of the scene is the back and forth with Maya trying to, you know, stave off these things, and Riley, like, being like, I know it didn't come from your dad, which actually opens up a little bit more about what we talked about last week, where we were still sort of unsure about the backstory with the dad. To me, this episode reinforces my point of view that she hasn't seen her dad in a very long time.
Yeah, I get that. It almost seems like in last episode they were making it recent, and this episode they're making it far away. How in each episode the storyline and the entire background of characters can change.
I mean, I think
I see what you're saying, but I just don't. It doesn't really.
Well, no, but I also rewatched last week, and, like, she says, like, he has a family, he left, like, he doesn't, it doesn't, by in no way does it sound like it was recent, if you actually pay attention to those specific lines he says. I'm pretty sure you're supposed to take it as it's been a while.
And then it goes back to what is the catalyst, then?
The catalyst is that, is literally just that he gave her an F.
I don't know, I don't see that, and also I feel like I don't understand how they didn't know this. How Cory and Topanga
didn't know what?
That her father had her family.
I don't think it's supposed to be a revelation. I think they are supposed to know it. Literally what happened is she has seen Cory as a father figure for years. He gave her an F because she struggled on the test, and she deserved an F because she struggled, and then she felt crushed because she saw her father figure as failing her.
To me, that alone being the catalyst makes me like the plot less.
Yeah.
For me to feel comfortable that the plot is, you know, more secure in itself, I want the catalyst to be that, and the fact that she's thinking about that with her father, just maybe he wasn't always present, but he just finally said, okay, this time I'm leaving for good.
I don't need that at all. I feel like that's just the fact that she doesn't have a father is supposed to be her, like, her defining, you know, thing about who she is right now, that she feels lost without a parental figure, and that Cory is the only person she's ever latched onto who's been there for her, and that him saying that he failed her, it means that she has no one. To me, that's a big catalyst for that episode. So, I don't know.
Either way, that's last death move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think this episode is dealing with two things. It sort of opens up with Maya's financial background again.
Yeah.
Where she walks in the village and she looks at all the things that she's never going to have, because that's a really expensive part of the city and with lots of expensive shops.
Yeah.
And she finds this locket in the lost and found, and she says, you know, like, something along the lines of, like, how dare these people, like, have something so nice and not even come back to get it.
Yeah.
And that's why she took it.
Yeah.
And so, my interpretation is, Maya isn't exactly being immoral or moral.
Yeah.
When you
that's
just look
pretty
at
neutral,
that,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty realistic.
I don't agree with her taking the locket, and maybe I would tell her, and I would tell her that. But I wouldn't be so heavy-handed in the way Riley was.
To call her a criminal?
But I think it's in Riley's character to do that. I think that...
She's so sheltered.
I think that she's sheltered and she's naive and that she's a goody-goody. And that totally made sense to me.
Yeah,
and by the end of the episode, she realizes that maybe she was being overly naive and goody-goody.
Yeah, I also just want to mention, though, is Maya is supposed to be her best friend. And she is supposed to be the person that Maya can go to and be understanding with. And she was completely overlooking the things that Maya was saying that Maya would be insecure and upset about. Like her financial position and the fact that her dad hasn't sent her anything in months. Or not months, she didn't say that, but in a long time, she said.
So are you saying you're mad at Riley, or that you think they shouldn't have written it that way?
Well, I mean...
Because I liked that I wasn't completely on Riley's side, honestly, because I don't think we should always be 100% on Riley's side.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's just dumb. I'm just saying I don't agree with Riley.
Well, I think that was part of it. Yeah. I think that was part of what Riley learned.
Yeah.
I think it was heavy-handed, but I think we do take away that the whole thing is that she learned that she shouldn't have been so quick to jump to that.
Yeah, it's the same exact thing as with Cory. Cory's being a total jerk, and we're not supposed to agree with Cory. Whether we find him funny or not, that's one thing. But we're not supposed to be like, yes, that's what you should do. You should make fun of your girlfriend's cooking for hours. We're not supposed to be on his side. Clearly, Augie is on his side. Riley's not on his side. But he learns that lesson. And same thing with Riley, where he is being judgmental. He is being, you know, that richer, more privileged person who takes the moral high ground and shouldn't because she doesn't understand her friend's situation. I think that's relatable. Whether you know that's good or not, I don't know. But I thought that was a good scene. I also think that it's the first time we had like actual conflict between the two characters, which is a good thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not disputing anything you're saying,
yeah.
And I'm not saying it shouldn't have happened. I'm just saying that if we're gonna analyze the characters,
yeah,
Riley was completely disregarding her best friend's feelings, and she was calling her a thief and a criminal,
yeah,
and she wasn't saying, like, you're feeling really bad about yourself right now, and I'm your best friend, and you're coming to me right now, what can I do to help you? Which is what most best friends would do.
That's also a super mature best friend, though.
Yeah, so I agree with what she's saying, but I think it was definitely a little bit overdone, but I think we're supposed to understand that is kind of the genre where everything's, at this point, we have to understand that everything's gonna be overdone, and that you have to take it back a little bit and then say, okay, and then that's what she's learning, which I don't exactly agree with, but you have to understand that that's what they're doing.
But I also feel like they definitely did stuff like that in Boy Meets World too.
No, definitely, but I think there was
Corey
a little
had
bit,
moments like that with
there,
Sean.
There was a little bit more balance between the sentimentality and the, you know, the overblown, hey, you're a jerk kind of stuff.
What do you think about the fact that they didn't have her actually steal? Did you prefer that they did it this way, or did
you... I prefer
you...
it.
Yeah, I think it was a nice nuance that unfortunately they overpowered with some of the other lacks of nuance. I think that it could have been a whole lot nicer if they integrated with more subtle things and less blunt, you know, interactions, especially what she was talking about with Riley. What I did really like about that is one of my favorite, you know, back and forths was the whole, you won't do well in the slammer.
I will. Yeah.
You're not going to pack right, you're going to forget your shower shoes when you go to the bathroom, and you're going to take someone else's, and you're going to get toe fungus because they're not yours.
And you deserve it.
So wait, I'm so confused now, because yes, I love those lines, and the fact that he said slammer multiple times was amazing, but isn't that the part that you guys think is over the top and overdone?
Right before that.
Okay.
That's just comedic.
It was the beginning of that scene.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the slammer stuff. I thought that was great. I also thought it was like extra funny knowing that Sabrina was on Orange is the New Black.
and they talked about shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because in the very first episode of Orange is the New Black, it's a whole big thing about shower shoes and stuff.
And how to pack your stuff.
And
like...
I really liked, you know, Corey coming through the window and being, you know, chased around all the entrances and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's jumping ahead a little bit, but...
Yeah.
The next thing that really happens is that we go into the hallway again, and we have Riley trying to talk to Maya again, and she has her crazy dance. What did you think of this dance?
It was a little too much, I think. Hallway dancing.
And it didn't really work for me. I actually liked the second little song thing way better when she says, what could possibly go wrong? And she's like singing that as she runs, like hops away. I like that a lot better than when she was just like being like, I can't hear you, blah, 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 in the bathroom.
I think a big part of that is it's more effective comedically as a dismissive thing when then you actually leave.
Yeah.
You know, and don't go away and then come back and then linger.
Yeah, that was really weird how she like went into the bathroom for half a second and then came back. I was like, what is this?
Right.
Yeah, it was a little too much, and I think it would have been okay if she did something like that. I think they needed to condense it and
make
it flow better.
When she actually left, it would have been made sense.
Yeah. It could have been edited a little better.
Yeah. And also that scene,
like
that was, unless I'm forgetting things that happened in that scene, wasn't that scene like another one that was completely not necessary?
Yeah.
Like, it was literally just a replay of the opening thing where she's like, well, what about Farkle? And then like Farkle's there saying random things about the chess club and how he's going to leave them. And then like nothing happens. There's no movement.
Yeah. Farkle was again too much for me. And also, I don't know if anyone else got this. It wasn't like strong for me, but I thought it kind of had a weird stigma for quote unquote nerds, as in kids that just like doing academic things like the chess club and the chemistry club. Like, you're either a quiet kid or you're someone like Farkle.
Well, I think this is going to lead to a much bigger conversation next week when we have the whole Riley becoming the queen of the dorks thing.
That's true.
Maybe we should table until then, because I feel like, well,
yeah, okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But I do agree with you.
All right, so then we are... So then after that scene, we're in the living room again.
Yes.
With...
All the books.
Augie, Topanga reading. Okay, so Augie's book title is Animal Stories.
Yep.
Topanga's book title is When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And Corey's book is When Bad Things Happen to Good Chickens.
I'm a really big fan of this.
I love it, yeah.
Yeah. I also just want to call out right now, everybody's, like, facial expressions in this episode are fantabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Corey reading that book is so good. You should look at some of the tweets I did, because I took a lot of screenshots. There's some great Riley's facial expressions, some great Corey ones, there's some really funny stuff.
Topanga did well with hers, too. They were really, like, really true to Boy Meets World.
The Topanga death glare, I called. Yeah, and then we get some more great Augie with him just being a little supplementary thing, and then we have the nice little argument with Corey and Topanga, and then
Corey...
Don't you think that Topanga should have been a little bit more willing to accept some criticism and to learn from her mistakes?
No, not at all.
No, Keith, you are a jerk. You are a J-E-R-K jerk.
She should learn how to do the best job she can do.
Don't you think women who are lawyers should learn how to cook in the kitchen?
Well, no, I'm saying anybody. Anybody who's doing anything, whether it's cooking or whatever, if they do horribly, you shouldn't say, oh, this is great, because then
you have... No, but you shouldn't say you suck at everything you ever
do. Completely didn't learn the lesson of the episode at all. You're not supposed to say, yes, this is great. You can go, you know, I really prefer it when you make this kind of chicken. This isn't my favorite, but thank you for making this meal for me. I appreciate the thought. That's what you say.
But if it's...
I'm getting flashbacks to all the times Keith has ever made me feel bad about anything I've cooked.
I'm an excellent cook.
Keith, you kind of suck, Keith. You kind of suck.
Yes, again, you could say, even if you wanted to be a little bit mean, you could be like, this is not the greatest thing, please don't make this again, and then drop it.
But what if it's a pterodactyl?
Okay, but the pterodactyl thing was funny. The whole thing was funny. It's interesting because...
Corey is completely entitled to his opinion. If he does not like it, he can say that. He does not have to hide his feelings from Topanga, but he does not have to be mean. He is going out of his way to say that this is the worst thing that he has ever had in his life. How do you think that makes Topanga feel? Who, after work, came home, and she decided that she wanted to make a meal for her family, and she hopes that they like it. Whenever you do anything for someone, you're going to hope that they like it.
Also, it's clearly not just an average, I wanted to just make this chicken. She wanted to make something special and different, and
okay,
maybe it didn't go right.
She's obviously upset, and he keeps doing it. If you see someone upset, and you keep antagonizing them, that's not being a good husband. That's not even being a good friend.
But let's make a comparison then, directly into the episode.
Okay.
Let's say they did the Farkle being an actor thing a little bit more naturally.
Yes.
Okay? And that we actually were sympathizing for Farkle.
Yeah.
We take this, so if Topanga thinks that's a good chicken, just like the false praise, you know, that was given to Farkle.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was you should be honest, you know, and how come you were on Maya's side when Maya's like, you stunk.
Because it wasn't done naturally. If it had been done naturally, I would think Maya was being too harsh.
I feel it's a little bit different when it's Maya who's like the jerky young friend, and that's like part of who her character is, as opposed to the husband who is supposed to love his wife and the wife who's actually being like legitimately upset about it. We also don't care if Farkle gets upset because we don't really necessarily care about Farkle's feelings because they're so crazy in this episode. I do think that the other thing is I am kind of bummed that the Farkle thing wasn't done more naturally because it is a legitimate thing. Like, I have a lot of actor friends. And, you know, I have people...
And they all suck.
I knew a lot of people who were in, you know, theater. They were going to college for theater. And they've gotten so much better over the years. But freshman year, I was, like, part of me in my mind was like, maybe I should tell them that they're sort of struggling and that, you know, you have to be amazing in order to actually do well in this field. But, like, you can't do that. But, so it is a complex tightrope that you're walking there. No matter what, you don't go, you suck. Especially if they care about what they're doing.
Yeah, it's just the whole moral is that both extremes are bad, and that you need to be more diplomatic in the way you say things, and you state your opinion, and then you let off, and you let that person take your your opinion and let it sink in and let them analyze it for themselves at that point. You've done your job, move on. You don't have to make them feel bad.
Yeah. This is why I think this isn't a good episode, because it actually deals with a legitimate issue in society.
Corey was my favorite character.
Anyway, so we get into she locks him out of the house. Okay, but I did not know. So I wanted to ask whether you thought this. So it clearly was very Corey Topanga, but it also felt pretty typical, like, dumb, bad husband and, like, shrewish wife to some degree. I think it worked because we know the characters, but it was sort of walking that line for me. Because that is, like, this could easily be an Everybody Loves Raymond plot.
Deborah!
But overall it worked really well, and I think Topanga was a lot better. Keith was saying when she kept appearing at the doors and he couldn't get in the house.
Corey literally says, I think there's two of her.
Yeah. And I also liked how it in a way that made sense, actually forced him into the conflict between Maya and Riley, because he had nowhere else to go. So then they have a little bit more of a talk, and Riley starts to see that maybe, you know, Maya has an actual legitimate stake in this, because they open up the locket and they see it's about family. And...
Oh, just to let everyone know, so when we saw the trailer for this, we really wanted to know what was in the locket. And Dan and I kept going back into the trailer, pausing it, and we're like, who is this woman? And we thought it was going to have some major turning point or someone, like, we're going to meet her. Who is she? Yeah. I don't know, like, maybe it's her mother, like... And it was just some woman.
Yep.
Put a lot of work into trying to figure that out. So many theories.
Some lady.
Just some lady.
We thought maybe it's her stepmom, maybe it's her actual mom. Okay, so but then we get the nice little thing where Augie sort of teaches the lesson to everybody. He teaches three different lessons. That's the other thing. That's the other reason why I really like this episode, is that the lesson isn't just like, here's the really obvious lesson that everyone knows. It's a nuanced lesson that has multiple parts to it.
And I love the meat of this episode. Unfortunately, there's very little of it, and then there's so much
craziness.
Of this other just garbage.
Yeah.
I don't like we're at the end when everyone's asking their questions and they're like, are you saying this and this and this?
Yeah.
He's like, do you guys really realize I'm this many? And he holds up his hand again. That's getting old for me.
I actually liked it. I liked it because I was glad that he at least was like acknowledging. He was like, you guys, I'm just a kid. The fact that he said this many, it was like silly, but it's been so long since he said it, I was okay with it. And the high five also helped.
Yeah, I like the high five a lot.
Okay.
Okay, so Corey is just with the girls and he says, I don't understand the universe at all. And that reminded me of the last scene of Boy Meets World. Not the last scene, the last episode of Boy Meets World, when he's talking to his little brother Joshua. Mm. And he says, you know, the universe, it's gonna, like, treat you badly, and you won't know why, but it's also the same universe that gives you all your friends and your family and whatever. And, you know, Boy Meets World. Oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
And all that. So that's what that reminded me of. And the other thing is Maya going in and out of the window. It reminds me of how Sean used to do that all the time in the early episodes. And it reminded me specifically of the episode where Sean comes in. He has to get out of Corey's room without his parents seeing him. And Sean's like, thinking of this ridiculous escape route and like something about going over the roof or whatever, and Corey's like, Sean, my parents are in the backyard, you can go out the front door.
Yeah,
and he's
great.
Just like, that's just so crazy, it might work.
Also, you reminded me, I really liked, it was like a small moment, but I liked that Riley brought up what happened at dinner with Maya.
Oh yeah.
And that, like, because that felt very real to me, like, oh, like, and it also, like, added to the fact that she feels like a part of the family and that she would have liked to see their interaction because she sees them as her parents to some degree.
I agree.
Yeah, that was good.
But moving on,
they're on the stage and Farkle is lying on the bed and they're like, Farkle, wake up or whatever, and like Maya's stabbing him with the spear and so I don't know, Dan, why don't you talk about this first?
Okay, so like I said, I liked the Maya saying you stink thing, and I think they did a pretty good job of Riley diplomatically sort of trying to explain to him. And I also really liked the thing about how he's not even allowed at the next performance, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny, but then it ending with the kiss, I don't know what I'm supposed to feel about that kiss.
Could I say something? I just really, it's going to be like a mini rant, but I'm going to keep it down.
Well, you're going to anyway, so might as well go ahead.
All right. So Farkle kissing Riley, That is literally sexual harassment, because Riley is, her lips are pursed, she's pulling away as much as she can, she's obviously unhappy. They even talk about it afterwards when Farkle leaves, and Maya's like, that was your first kiss, and Riley's like, it doesn't count, because obviously she did not want Farkle to kiss her, and she definitely did not want Farkle to be her first kiss. So I think looking back on that, that's going to be traumatic for Riley, in my opinion.
Now, I have something interesting to say.
Okay.
In Corey's alternative friends, when Corey was, you know, chained to the locker, and then Topanga kisses him, and Corey's like, no, no, no. Can you talk about that for
a while? Well, I want to first say that, I thought it was clearly trying to mimic that, which I thought was interesting because it did sort of push this whole, well, it's actually not Farley, it's like Philly or something, or Farley. I don't know where it is.
It's Farley.
It is not Farley, according to our listener.
It's Farley.
Okay, if you say so. It does sort of seem like that's pushing that Farley. And I do. I was thinking, okay, is there a way you can build this up that it starts off with her not really liking him, and then like as the characters evolve, it becomes more natural. The big difference, clearly, is that Corey didn't really like any girls at the time. That it was like he was so young.
Well, also another big difference is that Corey was in a vulnerable situation that Topanga helped him out in, and Topanga and Corey like made an alliance together in that episode, and they went through a lot. Riley and Farkle didn't really go through any major stepping stone. I feel like Corey and Topanga had some moments together where there was like a bit of tension, like good tension.
Yeah.
Whereas I didn't see any of that with Maya and Farkle.
Well, it's the other thing is they pretty much mostly dropped Farkle having a thing for Riley. Well, I guess they mentioned it last episode, but like it's like he wasn't specifically going after her over Maya at all. And yeah, so it does feel a little bit odd. They don't.
I just want to say that anyone who's like younger and listening, or anyone at all that's listening, you do not just like push up against someone and do that. Because even though it was kind of cute in Boy Meets World, you still don't do that. Don't use Farkle as a role model.
Okay, so I'm going to come back and say what I mentioned about the comparison. I was being the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I was hoping you guys didn't kind of touch anything. I was really hoping that you would.
Okay.
But I was just going to say, so I my actual true feelings are that in Boy Meets World, they did it a lot more believably, and there was less true antagonism, and it was more of sort of that, you know, sort of playful thing, because I do believe that Corey even might have. Did he smile at the end of that one, or am I thinking of a different scene?
I'm not. No, he just was shocked, I think.
Yeah.
He wasn't cringing.
Yeah. I do think it was pretty disturbing, actually.
Yeah.
In this scene in Girl Meets World. I think if that happened in real life, it would be borderline, if not.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. Like, I don't. Like, it's weird for me to say don't. It's weird for me to think of, like, oh, he's a bad role model, don't just go up and kiss a girl, because if this had been a scene where a hunky guy had walked up and like been confident and kissed someone out of nowhere, everybody would be like, yay! And then
You don't just kiss someone out of nowhere that you don't have a romantic...
Yes, sometimes you do. Sometimes you're being romantic. That is romantic, to just go and kiss someone, and sometimes they like you back, and that's exactly what you should have done.
You're violating that person's personal space. And
so you're saying
Farkle
you could never take control and be confident and just...
Not with any consensual talk at any point of, like, I like you, I might like you too. Because she wants Lucas to kiss her. She got right up on that bed and she was like, Lucas,
that's true.
In the situation, it's definitely weird and unsettling with that whole Farkle interaction. I think it was definitely... And it goes to what they're portraying as the characters, and then also goes to what they're portraying as a social responsibility, like we've been talking about. And it's hard to delineate sometimes, because even if it's not a potent or thought-out thing, the show itself will have a message, will have a takeaway... you know, and so it's hard to draw the lines, but I think it's almost never in real life okay to do that.
I just want to say that as a girl who was a middle school girl, I've seen this in front of my eyes, where like I was at a dance once and this girl was with her friends and there was this guy, and everyone knew that he liked her and he was kind of weird and she was sort of like a popular girl.
Yeah.
And he asked if they could slow dance together, and she said yes. And she had no problem with it. But then he was grabbing her really tight. He tried to kiss her, but he didn't, because she pushed him away. And she was so scared, she started crying. at the dance, and all of her friends went to go help her, and he walked away. And, like, this girl, like, she left the dance early. She was so upset.
I mean, in all reality, it's situations like this in middle school.
Yeah.
That when people are doing, these are the people that are doing this in high school and college. Because they don't have the accountability. It has nothing to do with, Dan, you were saying that you had talked to somebody on Twitter. They said they did not want their daughter to watch Girl Meets World. And we were talking about how, you can talk about now what you were saying.
After watching this episode, I think that if I was in a position where I had a kid now and they wanted to watch Girl Meets World, if I hadn't felt like this already, if I was sitting next to my kid and they watched this episode, I probably, if I had had the chance, I wouldn't have let them watch this episode unless, at the very least, I had to be with them so I could talk about what was wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I would let them watch Girl Meets World alone, and I think I would want to, like, maybe even screen the episodes.
And in that
I was
mindset,
very uncomfortable.
How old a kid are you talking?
I'd say up to 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so now I'm actually going to read a tweet right now that somebody's... We asked for some people to tweet in, and then we said we'd read them on the podcast. So I think that this will sort of fuel what you're talking about, and that... okay, so the first part is just... This is from @guest_a_fangirl, and she says, "Thoughts on Girl Meets the Truth. It was really emotional with Maya once again, but was also hilarious. I love the Phyle kiss." So, yeah, I can sort of see where you're coming from, where if a bunch of young girls are watching this episode and are using this kiss as a shipping moment, that is a little bit...
Unsettling.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I can really sympathize with a parent's point of view now.
And for me, this is the only episode in which I could understand that. I think that there were a lot of episodes before now that had a lot of weak points, but there's nothing until this episode that I would say, oh, I don't think that in, you know, as an over, like a touch-all situation, I would say, oh, this is okay for a kid to watch.
Yeah.
This does have some troubling, you know, content.
Yeah, and I'm the same way as before this. I didn't see any major issues as far as that. I think, like, maybe, I think that was something that I could leave up to my kid. But this is an episode that I would want to give them some guidance and some light on it.
I think that but I also think that I don't know if I'd go so far as you because if you're gonna go that far, I feel like it would mean that I'd have to watch and screen every show they watch, because I think there's a lot worse stuff than this. But I think to some degree you can deal with these issues just by teaching them separately about what's right and what's wrong, and that they'll hopefully from your lesson see this and realize that that's wrong. This storyline is problematic, and I agree with you, but I think that the rest of the episode had a lot going for it. I guess we have to see how they go forward from this. It's a difficult point in the episode, and I guess we should move on from the Phyle thing and talk about Lucas. And I really liked this Lucas
moment. I think it was
necessary.
I liked it a lot.
It was just side foreshadowing. It was kind of just like to give Lucas a little bit more to do, but I liked what it actually was. I liked his actual line. I thought he delivered it well.
Yeah.
Because it is sort of establishing more of what their relationship is heading toward. That's the clearest we've ever seen. Because the last time we really saw, like, a big thing with the two of them was, like, the sneak attack thing, where it's like, oh, we're not really ready to flirt, we're not really ready to go on a date. This is sort of setting up...
And then the episode after that, we were shipping Maya and Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, but this is sort of setting up, they really are heading in a direction instead of just friends. This clearly states they're not just friends who have a little tension. They're going somewhere.
Right, but I think I have a problem with that, because it's setting it up in a way which is, to me, totally... Like we were talking about in the last episode of the podcast, I think, how there's nothing between them except for time.
Yeah.
And also, I liked the Lucas and Maya 100 times better. And I think this undid a lot of what I liked in the last episode. And I'm wondering in what order they were written.
So the subway scene is next.
Yeah. So basically, they're planning to return the locket because Maya has decided that that's the right thing to do.
This was really confusing to me. So I took it as they were on their way to, like, where Maya originally got it in the Lost and Found, and happened to see the family in the subway, like, all together in the same position as they are in the picture.
Yes.
Because the universe is looking out for them.
It's a cool universe.
Wait, so what? What's the second part of that sentence?
Well, okay, so if that's how it's supposed to be, that's really convenient.
It's, yeah, but that's, like, the joke.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't do much for me. I don't have a huge issue with it, just, I don't know.
I didn't get a lot out of it, but I also didn't really have an issue with it. And it was all capped off to me by the pigeon being God, and I just loved that. So, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, so I just want to say that I thought this was definitely very sentimental, and I liked, like, when they were in the room, and Maya was talking about how, I don't know who this family is, but they're a father and a mother and a little girl, and they're all together, and they're happy, and I liked that, and, like, that was really emotional for me, and I liked it.
Yeah.
And when she, you know, knelt down and gave the little girl her locket and touched her hair, from Maya's point of view, that's really touching. Yeah. From the family's point of view, that might have been a little weird.
Well, I don't know. It's a cute little kid. It's like, and plus Maya's young.
Yeah, exactly. It's a cute little kid that if that was my kid, I'd be like, hey, strange girl who somehow has my property in the subway, who, I don't
strange
know.
Strange affection for my young daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's totally bad, and, because these kind of things happen in TV all the time. I'm just saying that, like, if I was the parents or even the little girl, I would be like, what's going on?
That's, like, pretty sad to me that you'd feel that way. Like, that, like, says something to me about our society, that you would be, like, uncomfortable about a 13-year-old girl being nice to your little kid.
I guess part of it is that Maya looks older.
Yeah, but, yeah, I really don't...
Maybe if she looked young, maybe if it was Riley... Yeah. I wouldn't feel...
Well, no, I think the biggest problem is it was on the subway.
Yeah.
It's not like a family-friendly setting.
I guess. Yeah, I guess I don't have any issue with that. I think that people... That
I
we
think
should...
it's a huge big deal, yeah. Because like I said, TV does that a lot. Yeah. And from Maya's point of view, that's like a really sweet moment.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's kind of funny that like if you were in that position, yeah. It would be kind of like... Even if you weren't like, hey, get away from my daughter, because I'm not saying I would necessarily do that.
You'd just be like, what?
Yeah, I would just, like, once she walked away, I'd be confused.
Yeah. I do want to say, in case we didn't actually say it, just thank you to Just a Fangirl, and that you, at least you seem to both agree on the fact that it was emotional about Maya and that whole family thing.
And if you're going to be mad at anybody for being mean, be mad at me.
And I'm going to bring up just the other tweet that we got, which was from at rstickle24, who's a loyal listener and has tweeted us a few times, so thank you.
Oh, well, thank you!
He says, I thought it was the funniest episode so far. I liked the role Augie played. I agree with both of those sentiments, personally.
I'm just going to comment that I also really liked the way that Augie was used, and I thought there was good comedic timing in this episode, yeah. Mostly with the family scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that pretty much ties things up, right? Then we just have the ending sort of getting back together scene with Corey.
Yeah, in the living room where everyone but Keith learns the lesson of the episode.
Yeah. And it was a sweet little moment. Was the kiss-kiss thing from previous thing, Boy Meets World?
Yeah. Well,
they didn't
do kiss-kiss. Topanga would look at Corey and be like, kiss, and they would kiss.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. Alright, so any last thoughts on Girl Meets the Truth before we close out?
I think we said it all.
Okay. So, if you want to reach us, you can do so. You can email us at...
None of the things that Caitlin said in the reaction video.
Yeah. You can email us at gmwpodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at gmwpodcast. You can look at our blog at gmwpodcast.wordpress.com. You can go on iTunes and search Kids Get Acquainted with the Internet, and we'll be on there. And you can subscribe to us and rate us and review us, and that would be super cool.
Our YouTube channel.
And if you dare to watch the video on YouTube.
We salute you.
Yes.
A quick little aside on that. What happened was, we started trying to record on my phone, which has no front camera. And that came out horrible. and then we went to her camera, her front camera on her phone. And as I was recording and we made a whole bunch of mistakes, I kept hitting stop. and we showed it again, only
we thought that was going to make a new video, but it actually just paused it, and then it spliced everything together. And so that's why it's an entire blooper reel, and then you have the real video at the end.
There almost is no content whatsoever.
And we hope you love it as much as we do.
The duck was pretty great. I have to give props to that duck. He did his job.
Yeah, is that your permanent stand-in, you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty on board for that.
All right. Tweet at us if you like the duck, or if you think there's anything else that would be a better stand-in. If Keith and I are ever missing, let us know if you have a suggestion.
Duckies rule!
I was so surprised you didn't say that during the video.
Dan, there was so much going on!
Dan, I'm surprised we even could say the title in the video.
Yeah.
We didn't in most of the videos.
Well, you also said it wrong because you didn't say the truth.
Oh, that title. I was talking about our name.
Oh, okay.
Because on any of the websites, it's not actually labeled correctly, and none of them, not even all of them are the truth episode.
Yeah. Well, one last thing I'll just say is if you have a good idea for how we should sign off on these podcasts, why don't you tweet at us, because we never know what to say, but bye.
Love you all.
Yes, we love you all.
And tune in next week for episode 6, Girl Meets Popular.
Yeah, God bless us, everyone.
Now, you see, duckies are good because not only do they give you that non-threatening sense of security, but you can feed them crackers and you can ride them. See, duckies are the horsies of the ocean. Duckies rule!